With me now for a return visit to Fresh Air is Chicago journalist Bob Green, whose syndicated column originates in the Chicago Tribune and is carried in the Philadelphia Inquirer. He also writes the monthly American Beat column for Esquire magazine and is a contributing correspondent for ABC's Nightline. Green describes himself as the kind of guy who'd drop everything and go anywhere for a story. A couple of years ago, he became a father, and dropping everything to leave town for a story had a new meaning, because it necessitated leaving his wife alone with the baby and left him unable to witness exciting moments in his baby's development. Bob Green knew the birth of his daughter was going to change his life more than any other single event ever had, and he frequently writes about turning points in other people's lives, so he decided to write about his own. He kept a journal during his first year as a father. Then he adapted that journal into a book. It's titled Good Morning, Mary Sunshine, A Father's Journal of His Child's First Year, and it's just been published by Athenaeum. Bob Green, welcome back to Fresh Air.
Thank you.
Let's start with the birth itself, like many fathers, you were present at the birth of your child.
It seems to me that we hear that at that moment of birth, a father is supposed to feel ecstasy and joy and giddiness and great happiness. And of course, I felt all those things, but the primary emotion that went through me as I saw my daughter enter the world was a feeling of fear. And it was fear, I think, that lurks where the greatest fears have always lurked, which is fear of the totally unknown. I just had no idea about what was to come. When I had found out I was going to become a father, I did what I always do as a journalist. I did research, and I found pregnancy guides and child development guides and healthcare guides. But I couldn't find anything that told me on a human level what it was like when a man and woman bring a child home and when a house that has held two people suddenly holds three. The day my daughter, my wife's labor was rather difficult, and the next afternoon as she was asleep in her hospital room and my new daughter was asleep in the hospital nursery, I took a cab home, but I didn't go straight home. I stopped off at my newspaper office, and I realized it was probably going to be the most monumental day of my life, and I didn't want to forget anything. So I wrote down exactly what happened that day, and then I did it again the next day and the day after that. And slowly it occurred to me, I mean, if there's anything I've ever tried to specialize in, it's writing human stories. It occurred to me that if I kept a diary of my first year as a father and my child's first year on Earth, it could be the most human story I'd ever told. I mean, it's the most commonplace miracle of all. But, I mean, one day this person doesn't exist, and a year later she's walking up to you and saying your name. But no one ever told me how this happened. Even though it's been happening precisely this way for tens of thousands of years, no one ever told me. And so I started keeping the daily journal of that first year, and Good Morning, Mary Sunshine is the journal of the first year of my life as a father.
You were present at the birth of your daughter, and it was a painful and very difficult birth for your wife. Did you feel like your presence was helpful when the complications started developing?
Yeah, I can't imagine being in the waiting room of my father's generation or down at the corner bar, as I understand some fathers used to do. I think it's important that you be there. I mean, I just from a selfish point of view, I couldn't imagine just waiting for some nurse or doctor to come in either 1 hour or 6 hours, not having any idea. On the other hand, the book is causing some controversy because of some comments I made about Lamaze class in it. We went to Lamaze class, and when my wife was in labor, she was in the worst pain I'd ever seen her in, and yet she was very reluctant to ask for drugs. And finally, she did ask for pain-killing drugs, but not until she was in a great deal of pain. And I came away from the experience a little angry at the implicit message in Lamaze, which is that women are somehow giving in if they request pain-killing drugs, and that somehow childbirth is something that's eminently manageable and that a woman can get through on a smile and a prayer and a breath. I just didn't find it to be that way. Now, the Lamaze teachers, you know, they were very caring and they were good and their intentions were good. But I've heard of women who come out of the delivery room and the first thing they say to their husbands is that they're worried their Lamaze teachers will be upset because they gave in and asked for drugs. And I amend this by saying, obviously, this is just one male point of view about this. But I think it'd be a lot safer, and not safer, but a lot better if women were told, look, a lot of you are going to need pain-killing drugs and there's no crime if you admit you need it.
Yeah, I think some of the Lamaze teachers, or some of the prepared childbirth teachers, I should say, have that attitude, not to, like, encourage drugs, but to say, you know, if you're in terrible pain, you know, choose a good option.
Yeah, and they all, I mean, and the reason I use the phrase implicit, I mean, it's because every Lamaze teacher says, now, some of you will need drugs, but the way it is said is that, like, you're somehow less of a woman if you need them. And as a man, I wish they were taught something else.
Were you able to get a paternity leave when your daughter was born?
I think 2 or 3 weeks. I took my year's vacation that year after she was born, but I didn't ask for paternity leave. I mean, one of the themes that runs through the book is that I've always been a pathologically ambitious person. I mean, I've always been the person to run off on the story or meet the camera crew at the airport. And I wondered, everyone told me when I was about to become a father that this was going to change my life, and that's what the cliche was. And my problem was I sort of liked my life the way it was. And all during that first year, I mean, one of the threads that runs through the diary is this conflict between trying to be a good father and being home and also not wanting to give up this ambition that's always consumed me. So a paternity leave was not offered to me, nor would I have taken it. And to me, the challenge was, you know, how to, on the one hand, you keep trying to do your job right, and on the other hand, be the best father you can.
Your wife gave up her job so that she could be home full-time with the baby. What kind of work had she done before?
She was a legal assistant, a paralegal, and she quit shortly before our baby was born. And she's at this point still at home with the child. I get asked a lot of times like whether I endorse that for other women. And I'm quick to point out that Good Morning Mary Sunshine is not an advice book. Basically, I consider myself a fairly average new father, new parent, who kind of fumbled and stumbled his way through the first year, but I happened to be a writer and I kept track of it. And I was really trying to just to express the emotions that come during that first year. I realized that some women want to go back to work right away and some women economically must go back to work sooner than they'd wish. In our case, the way we worked it out was that I kept working and she didn't. Now, obviously, this changes for every family.
Is that something that you had decided to do beforehand?
Well, we knew I would. No, she didn't know what she was going to do. I think she really liked being a mother, and I knew I wasn't going to quit my job. I mean, I thrive on my work, but in other families, I can see it happening other ways. I just think it's very, very important, at least at first, for that child to have a full-time parent around all the time.
What were you prepared to give up when she was born?
I didn't know. Like, for example, when Nightline calls and says, say, we've got a story for you in California tomorrow, it used to be that I'd say, great, I'm having dinner in Los Angeles tomorrow night. Now, I still go, but I feel bad that I'm not home with my daughter. Or on a more mundane level, if I'm working late on the newspaper column, I'll often go out and have a drink after work. And so if I'm working until 6 o'clock, say at 6:30 I'm at the bar having a drink and the bartender says, would you like a refill? Now, in the old days, I would have said, sure. But now, I look at my watch and my daughter goes to bed at 8 o'clock and I realize she's only going to be up for another 90 minutes. What am I doing sitting here? And so I go home, and it's not through any sense of altruism or trying to be a good father. It's because, frankly, it's become more fun for me, and that's what's changed, and that's what I couldn't have anticipated.
What do you think you would have done if your wife wanted to go back to work? Do you think it could have worked out with the kind of job that you have?
I'm sure in families where it happens, it does work out. I mean, I was pretty sure it wasn't going to happen in our family. But yeah, it works. I mean, I'm not sure it would have been as satisfying for either of us. I mean, in our particular family, it worked this way. And one of the things about the book that I was sort of afraid of is because I was so specific in recounting the first year of my life as a father, as a parent, that the book, you know, might be too narrow. But what I'm finding out, excerpts from the book ran in Esquire and in Redbook prior to publication of the book. And from the first day those excerpts hit the stands, people were letting me know that they were responding not to the specifics of what happened to me, but to the emotions. People would say, well, your experiences were different than ours in detail, but boy, those emotions of the first year are what sort of gets us. And so I think people are reacting not so much to the fact that, say, I went to work and my wife stayed home, as the fact that this is what it feels like to be a parent.
My guest is Bob Green, the syndicated columnist, Esquire magazine columnist, and ABC Nightline contributor, and he's written a new book based on his journal of the first year of his daughter's life, and it's called Good Morning, Mary Sunshine. When I was reading your book, and there were so many moments of frustration where you'd be on assignment somewhere in town or out of town thinking, boy, would I rather be home with my daughter. And then I was thinking, if you had so little time with your daughter, why you spent so much time keeping the journal, thinking, well, maybe that was time that you could have actually spent with her.
When you really go through it, it wasn't that little time. But, I mean, I did become sort of obsessed with the idea that I got to quit working so hard. And I don't think it's just me whose business is reporting. I think whether a father is a doctor or a lawyer or a banker or a salesman, he'd be thinking the same things. The reason I kept the journal, besides the obvious reasons, but the reason I kept the journal is I'm not real good at expressing my emotions verbally. I mean, I never have been. And usually when I really want to get my feelings out, I put them down on paper, either into a typewriter or a word processor or whatever is available. And during that first year, because I was writing about my daughter and because I was paying such close attention to her, I felt it drew me closer to her. I mean, I felt I was so close to her during that first year because I was writing this down every night that at the end of every day, no matter what else I did, it was almost like a lovely period of the day where I could just go off by myself for a little bit and write down how I was feeling about being a father and how I was feeling about my daughter. And so I think it brought me closer to her. Now, maybe for someone else, it wouldn't have. Like, I'm not a guy who takes home movies or takes snapshots or videotapes around the house. So when another father might have been doing that, that's when I was writing my journal.
That feeling of being scared that you experienced when she was first born, when did that start to subside?
It gets a little less in some ways every day. I mean, the first time I picked my daughter up, it was like I was trying to balance a dozen crystal goblets on each forearm. I was so afraid I was going to drop her. That sort of gets better. But in August in the journal, I talk about going to this thing called Chicago Fest, which is kind of a county fair in the city of Chicago. And there were all these drunken teenagers at Chicago Fest, and it's out in this thing called Navy Pier outside. And the boys were all bare-chested and drunk on beer, and the girls were drunk too, and were wearing halter tops, and their behinds were dropping out of their cut-off jeans, and they were being aggressively obscene in their language, and they were sitting there, necking and making out openly on the midway. And I was thinking, my generation is the one that sort of has made complete social freedom an accepted way of life in America. And I can't imagine that all these kids on the midway had parents who didn't care about them. And so I wondered, were the forces my generation brought to bear, do they guarantee the fact that in 15 or 18 years my daughter will be one of the girls in the midway? I mean, how do you combat that? So those are the kind of fears that replace the first fears of how are you going to deal with this.
Yeah, I think you were also... Every time you'd see some teenager talk back to their parent, wondering.
All of a sudden, things that never occurred to you. I mean, on a positive sense, like my daughter had been born for about 3 days, and I was walking down the street, and there was a lady with a baby in a stroller, and I turned to the woman, and I said, "How old's that baby?" And then I realized I'd never asked that question before in my life. I mean, things that never occur to you before become very commonplace.
Your parents, both sets of parents, came and helped out with the baby during its early months. Was it useful to see your wife's parents and your parents handling the baby?
I will say, I mean, having just said that it's not a book of advice, the one piece of advice I would give is get a grandmother there right away. My daughter Amanda was a couple days old when my mother-in-law, the baby's grandmother, arrived. And immediately things got calmer. I mean, she knew how to hold the baby. She knew how to talk to her. She knew how to walk her around the room. And then my father-in-law, the grandfather, came in and... When my daughter would cry or not go to sleep, my wife and her mother seemed to know at least what to try to calm the baby down. My father-in-law and I didn't have a clue. And I mean, leave me out of it for a second. He's a guy who used to land fighter planes on aircraft carriers during World War II. I mean, this is a guy who can clearly take care of himself. And I know it sounds sexist to say, and I don't mean it that way, but there's something, not genetic, but something passed down socially through the generations that seem to make women believe they can deal with this mystery of a new baby and make men sort of inherently doubt it. And, I don't know what that is, but at least in my case, it was definitely there.
When you were watching your mother around the baby, did that make you think of what it must have been like when you were an infant?
Oh, completely. I mean, the way the book got its title was I walked into my... my daughter's bedroom when she was a couple weeks old, and as I had been doing every morning as I got her up, I said to her, "Good morning, Mary Sunshine." And my wife was standing behind me, and she said, "Why are you saying that?" And I said, "What do you mean?" She said, "What is this, Good morning, Mary Sunshine? You say it every day." And I hadn't even been aware I was saying it. And I thought back, and I realized Good morning, Mary Sunshine is what my mother said to me when I was a child. And I hadn't heard the phrase in 30 years, but all of a sudden, I was saying it to my own daughter every morning. So there's some very universal feelings about parenthood, whether you're a man or a woman, that come through.
Well, what are some of the techniques your parents used on you that you've decided to either use or reject?
I don't remember the techniques, and I don't think of this whole thing in terms of techniques, but I just think the idea of paying such close attention and just always being there. I mean, another reason that I endorsed the idea of keeping the diary was just paying such close attention every day. I think a child knows if it's being sort of half-noticed or if the parents really are there. And I think more than any technique, it's just the idea. I mean, you can't fake the idea of caring about a child. And I don't, you know, the first year of a child's life is the year that he or she never remembers. But as you know, during the diary, I kept saying, I can't help but believe that someday she's going to know that her parents were paying this kind of close attention to her. And I think that's something that, you know, if it doesn't happen the first year, you can never make up for it.
Have you fallen into any patterns that you used to swear you never would if you became a father?
Yeah, I used to be talking to my friends on the phone, and I'd be talking to a friend, and all of a sudden he'd be talking to me, and then he'd say, "No, honey, no, is that a bug on the porch? Is that a great big bug on the porch?" And I'd say, "I'm not, honey, and what are you talking about?" Well, of course, he'd be talking to his little child. And I thought that was so rude. And then all of a sudden now I find myself talking to a friend, and all of a sudden I'll be saying, "Don't crawl in there, honey. Don't crawl in there. Crawl back here." I'm doing the same thing. And I realize that the other person on the end of the line can take care of himself or herself. My baby is just beginning to crawl, and she can't. And so I still think it's a rude thing to do, but now that I'm doing it, it's a necessary rude thing to do.
Do you, when you're in the supermarket, stop other people with their babies and ask their age and things like that?
Well, I did that. I tried to stop doing it. I'm not really that kind of guy, and I sort of give people their privacy. But I certainly do notice, and if someone I think is treating their child a little too harshly, I'll notice that. Or, I mean, I'll just notice things I never saw before. I mean, even in my writing, I recently did a piece. The publishing company that owns the rights to the Beatles songs has sued Sesame Street, because apparently the publishing company feels that the Sesame Street song "Letter B," which is about the letter B in the alphabet, is a ripoff of the old Beatles song "Let It Be." And I wrote this scathing article attacking the publishing company and defending Sesame Street. And it occurred to me 2 years ago, I didn't know who Bert and Ernie and Big Bird and Grover and the Cookie Monster were. And now they're like my best friends. I mean, it changes you in the most little ways.
Are you into Mr. Rogers yet?
We're just getting there, yeah. In fact, the episode where he goes to the farm and milks cows is our all-time favorite so far.
My guest is Bob Green, syndicated columnist, Esquire magazine columnist, Nightline reporter, and author of a new book about his daughter's first year. It's called Good Morning, Mary Sunshine, and it's based on his journals of that first year of her life. When you'd come home after a hard day's work, the baby would be like entertainment for you.
And more than that, I mean, there was one day when I'd been out on a political story during the Chicago mayoral elections, and I was up at 6 a.m. and I was chasing a news source all over the north side, and I got down to the paper, and I arrived back in the newsroom, and they wanted to promote it on page one, and I worked and I wrote it on deadline, and I was vibrating with adrenaline when I got home. I was so up about this story. And I walked in, and my wife said, "Amanda learned how to drink from a cup today." And so for the first time, my daughter had not drunk from a bottle but was drinking from a cup, and I watched her do it. And I realized yesterday she couldn't drink for a cup, and today for the first time for the rest of her life she'll be drinking from a cup. And it made what I'd done that day seem so meaningless. I've just had no importance at all. And things like that, they're humbling and they teach you things, and they just put life in perspective in a way I'd never known before.
Did your wife feel that way too? Because I think, especially, you know, like if a woman has worked for her adult life and then she's home all day with the child, as much as she loves the child and loves being a mother, I wonder if it doesn't get frustrating.
It's very confining.
Especially when her husband is someone like you who has what would be considered a very glamorous job. I'm not saying it's not hard work, but you get to go all over and be on the front page and be on television.
It's very confining for her, but in a way I think she sort of likes. And the payoff comes. I mean, one day when my daughter had just learned to crawl, my wife and I were at the dining table, and my wife was on the right side of the table, and I was on the left side of the table. And Amanda crawled across the living room, and she had to decide for the first time in her life, does she veer to her right and go to her mother, or does she veer to her left and go to her father? And she looked at her mother, and she looked at me, and she went to her mother. And I realized, and it's probably not the most healthy thing to resent, you know, your child for choosing your wife over you, but I realize this is the price I pay for all this running around and going out on stories and being at work. The first time my daughter has to choose, she naturally chooses her mother. So I think there are payoffs on the other side.
Do you think that she resents being the one that has to do most of the work? Because what I'm thinking is, like, when you come home, it's fun to play with the baby and all, and she's home all day, and the baby is her work.
Well, there's a phrase that she got in a book somewhere,
yeah,
which is Mom means work, dad means play, or dad means fun. There's no getting around that. And I've got Some people have commented about the book that, I mean, it makes it clear that this is the case. I mean, I wasn't trying to write a politically correct book. I mean, I wasn't trying to say the things that are socially absolutely correct. And I think if you read the book, you might find that maybe a couple times when I shouldn't have, I asked for a meal to be cooked for me when I should have gotten it myself. But when I kept the diary, I made myself promise myself that I wouldn't try to edit it or update it or make myself look better. And so if on July 3rd I said something and on September 3rd I looked back and thought, boy, that was a stupid thing to say in July, I kept it in there because it really is a journal of that first year and I wanted to keep it honest to how the things really went.
Have you spoken to your parents about aspects of your childhood and parenting that you wouldn't have ever considered bringing up before?
Not that I'd spoken to them. I mean, I mentioned before I'm not real good expressing my emotions, and I'm probably for some reason, I guess a lot of people our age share that. I'm not the most communicative person with my parents the way I ought to be, and so I didn't even tell. I mean, I didn't talk to them much about it, and when they found out that the book was called Good Morning, Mary Sunshine, they knew immediately where that came from, and they were very moved by that. And then when they got the book, it's as you know, it's dedicated to them, and they were very moved by that. So I think that the book itself is what told them how I feel about them being parents and me being parents and the whole cycle of life. And I'm finding in a very gratifying way, I'm finding that many people in their 20s and 30s tell me that they have given the book to their parents as a sort of sign of this, we know we're all in this together, and now we finally see what you went through 20 and 30 years ago. I do it better on paper, but the things that I get across them through the book, I think, is what I would have said out loud if I was better at that.
You wrote that one of the things you've always noticed about people who have children is that their houses are a mess.
Yeah.
It's just always chaos. And I take it that you had, before your child was born, a very handsomely
Well, it
was. House.
It didn't look like Better Homes and Gardens, but it looked like it was trying to be. No more.
How did you feel about the chaos in your own home?
It was sort of a pleasant chaos. I mean, it's the same reason. I'm not a very snappy dresser, but I try to at least wear neat, clean clothes. And then, as soon as you have a little baby around the house, your shoulders are always sopping wet. I mean, because they're always drooling on you. But I went to work feeling great about that. I mean, things like that, and about my daughter will take magazines and records and throw them all around the living room. But I mean, I don't know. If it was like that without a child in the house, you wouldn't like it. But with a child there, it makes it okay.
My guest is Bob Green. We're discussing the subject of his new book, which is a journal of the first year of his daughter's life. And the journal is called Good Morning, Mary Sunshine. It's just been published by Athenaeum. I'd like to invite you to call with any questions or comments that you have if you'd like to participate in this conversation. And we'd certainly be interested in hearing from men and women about how having a child has changed your life in that first year. Our number for questions or comments is 923-2774. At area code 215, the number again is 923-2774. Are there things, sentimental things, that you used to scoff at that you find yourself doing now?
For example, one day I came home at the end of the day and my daughter was looking at the sunset. And I realized it was the first time she'd ever seen a sunset. And she was looking out the window. And I knelt down next to her and I watched the sunset with her. And I realized I haven't watched a sunset in years. And it's almost as if by going through the first year of your child's life with him or her, you can see those things for the first time too. In that first year, it's almost as if every day is her birthday and you're seeing things in a brand new way. I mean, when people ask me about why I would write such a personal book, I mean, I answer that I don't know how many times in a person's life he's allowed to see a miracle happen. And to me, this whole thing is a miracle. And you just got to pay close attention.
Another thing that's happened is that you said you started feeling competitive about other children, that you noticed that coming
out.
We went to a
breakfast, brunch, whatever you call it, at a couple's house we'd gone to Lamaze class with. And they had a little girl about a month before we did, and we happened to think our daughter was pretty advanced for a baby, as most parents do. But all of a sudden, it became apparent this Sharon Weiner, this other little girl, was much more advanced. I mean, my daughter was still just learning to crawl, and Sharon was already propping herself up and edging along the wall and standing up on her legs. And I found myself feeling, competitive with this little girl, and thinking, I wish my daughter was doing better. And I realized that's no good. I mean, that's that's how the whole little league syndrome starts, you know, trying to make your kid be the good one. But I try to get away from that.
Is it hard to do?
Yeah, although the next day she did something good at our house, and I wondered if Sharon Weiner could do that, so it reversed itself pretty quickly.
Because you've described yourself as being very ambitious, and I wonder, you know, how much you let that carry on.
I know.
I
think that's another good thing about keeping the journal. I mean, even when I noticed the emotion, I immediately got rid of it because I wrote it down that night.
Okay, well, let's take our first phone call. Our number again, 923-2774. My guest is Bob Green, and we're discussing the subject of his new book, Good Morning, Mary Sunshine, which is a journal of his daughter's first year. Hi, this is Fresh Air, and you're on the air.
Thank you. Mr. Green, are you the same gentleman that wrote this beautiful, sensitive, stirring book about a child, that wrote the atrocious article about guilt of those who didn't go to Vietnam?
I am.
Well, I think it's a massive contradiction, don't you?
I hope not.
Lack of sensitivity about the whole Vietnam situation and your absolutely adoring, beautiful, sensitive concern with a child.
Well, I hope it's not a contradiction, but I guess people who are listening will have to judge that on their own.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for your call. Do you think you'd feel differently about
no,
war
basically,
and fighting with
no,
China?
No, basically, I mean, I knew that was a controversial column. All I was doing in that column, and I won't dwell on it, I mean, all I was doing in that column was pointing out that there's a lot of men who didn't go to Vietnam who were feeling that the men who did go were somehow more substantial and somehow, to use an old phrase, more manly, and whatever term that means, than those who didn't go. And it was mostly about a set of emotions on the part of a whole generation of American men. And I happen to be very fond of that column, but I realize it stirs some emotions.
Okay, let's take another phone call. Hi, this is Fresh Air. You're on the air.
Mr. Green, you've mentioned many of the insights that having a daughter has given you, and I wondered if you also had insights into your wife and into your marriage. I hope that's not too intimate a question.
No, well, it changes everything in all kinds of ways. I mean, from the most basic ways that you get up at a different time in the morning than you used to, and you schedule your meals around everything else. But I think it brings you together in ways you couldn't have imagined before. I mean, I think I used the phrase before that we're a generation that has made self-indulgence a kind of secular religion. And all of a sudden, you know, you're in charge, you're responsible for something very much bigger than anything you've dealt with before. I mean, my parents, for example, they went to New York for their anniversary during this year of my daughter's first year of life. And my parents are in their 60s now, and they're not as young as they used to be. And New York is not quite the same place it was 20 or 30 years ago either. And I found myself being worried about my parents, just sort of, you know, wondering if they were okay. And so at the end of every day they were in New York, I'd make an excuse to call their hotel and talk to them. And actually what I was doing was checking up on them. And so on the one hand, I was, you know, responsible for my child. And on the other hand, I now realize that I was responsible for my parents, at least in some psychic sense. And I realize this is the magical point we're all supposed to arrive at someday, when we're responsible for everybody around us. So that's how it changes everything.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for your call. You mentioned how having a child brings a husband and wife closer together in ways that you wouldn't have imagined. There's one point in the book, and that you mentioned, and I wonder how you resolved this, where your wife looked at you and said, "You're relating to me differently than you had before. I think you now see me just as our daughter's mother."
She said, "Do you see me now as Amanda's mother?" And even a more startling episode, I guess, as you know, was an entry where I was saying something to my daughter, and I said, "Mom will help you with that later." And I turned to my wife and I said, "Won't you, Mom?" And she said, "What did you say?" And I said, "I asked you if you'd help her with that later." She said, "What did you call me?" I said, "I didn't call you anything." And she said, "You called me Mom." I said, "Well, I didn't realize it." She goes, "Look, I may be Amanda's mom. I'm not your mom. I'm your wife. But that's something you deal with you never dealt with before either."
Was there a resolution to that?
I think she called me Dad the other day by mistake. No, I don't know if there's a serious resolution to it, but it does change. I mean, all of a sudden, you know, the person you married for all kinds of reasons is now the person who you see as your child's mother. And I, on the other hand, am my child's father. So that's different, too.
Let's take another phone call. And our number again is 923-2774. Hi, this is Fresh Air, and you're on the air.
Hi. Well, I have a son 2 years old, and it brought a large change in my life than the fact that I was sort of a rock and roll or whatever, a rock and roll music fan. And I wanted to play a lot of music for my son, and I started listening to the words that were going into his ears, and I switched quickly switch from rock and roll to classical music.
I
got a lot out of, you know, so now I'm a classical music fan, and, you know, I got a lot out of that, so it was good for both of us.
That's a good point, and also when you're watching television, I mean, I was with my daughter, and there was a detective show one night, and she was very young, and all of a sudden some, you know, actor playing a criminal on the show shot another actor on the show, and my daughter, before I could stop her from seeing it, had seen her first televised killings. I mean, she'd seen someone shoot someone on television.
Right.
And, you know, I don't know what the studies say about that and what sticks in a child's mind and what doesn't, but I'll tell you this. I saw her flinch when that shot was fired.
Right.
And
that's why we listen to WHYY and watch WHYY almost exclusively. But, and what you were saying about the mom and dad thing, I think we sort of psychologically, I hadn't really thought about that, but we call each other Ma and Paul.
How old are you?
I'm 30 and my wife's 33.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of not your Ma and Pa stereotype, but you do start feeling that way.
No, well, we call each other Ma and Pa, and the kids don't call us that, so it's like to refer to each other as the mother and father of the other one, but without being
serious about it.
You know, if I called her Mom, I might think I was talking to my mother or something like that.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm glad to hear somebody talking about the influence of the kids on, I think it's a, you know, it's hard to talk about it to some people. You know, the people who don't have kids or who aren't excited about it, about their kids, it's hard to find somebody to talk about what you're going through with your kids without sounding like, you know, some kind of a brag person. But I'm glad to hear you talking about it and writing about it. Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot
for your call. Well, that raises another question. Did you find that you became closer to your friends with children and more distant from your friends without children?
Not really. I think somehow the change happens so much inside of you. I mean, you become a sort of a different person. Some of it are just logistical changes. I mean, you're home more than you used to be. But no, I still have pretty much the same friends I had before.
Okay, let's take another phone call. Our number again for questions or comments is 923-2774. Hi, this is Fresh Air. You're on the air.
Hello. I was interested to hear you. You reminded me a lot of my son with his little baby daughter. But I felt, and he has too, I know, the fact that isn't able to talk to us, and to me and his father. And I wondered if you could have given any thought to it or considered what we did that made this barrier, or what you can do now with your little girl not to have that barrier.
I don't think you did anything. I mean, it's nobody's fault. It just happens. I mean, when a child is born, he or she is so close to the parents because there's a complete dependency. And as the years go by, inevitably a distance grows. And in some cases, such as my own, the distance is sometimes great. And so I think all you can do is be as close as you can during those beginning years. And I hope I understand if in some future year my daughter as a grown-up sort of walks silently past me and goes into the other room, that I was the same way and I couldn't help it either. But I remember these first days.
Well, it's a great pleasure now to see him remembering incidents and things that we remember that he hasn't said anything about, such as your Merry Sunshine, things like that.
Right.
It's a great pleasure. And we didn't need it verbalized, but I would think it'd be too bad for people who don't have this avenue of letting their parents see what they can recall.
Well, thanks a lot for your phone call.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Hi, this is Fresh Air, and you're on the air.
Hi, Terry and Bob. How are you?
Hello.
Bob, I just wanted to tell you that all the things that you're experiencing are very similar to the things that I'm experiencing. I have a 3-month-old. And I got to see the birth, but my wife had a C-section.
They let you in even for that?
Pardon me?
You were allowed to watch even that?
Yeah, I was really fortunate.
Yeah.
And the experience was just awesome. It really was.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear you say that. And again, what the response I'm getting from the book indicates that obviously we all live different lives in the specifics, but these emotions are so universal that it's sort of nice to hear that you're going through the same things.
Yeah. Now, I'm a freelance commercial artist, so I get to work out of the house.
Well, you're lucky.
Yeah, so I get to see when she first lifts her head and does all those first little things.
Right.
And there are some personal sacrifices here and there, like you've talked about, but they're all worth it. And I just am constantly amazed at things that are okay with me that I would have never imagined I would have ever done.
Well, thank you for letting me know.
Yeah, so thanks a lot for your book. I'll be sure to read it.
Thanks so much.
Okay. Thanks for your call. Hi, this is Fresh Air. You're on the air.
Good afternoon. I just wanted to ask you, did you read the Susan Fields book, Like Father, Like Daughter, what your feelings about the big book were, and what influence did it have on the way you interact with your own daughter?
I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with that book, so I guess I have to answer, I haven't read it yet.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for your call. Hi, this is Fresh Air. You're on the air.
Hi. I've been listening to you. I have a 2-year-old daughter and a 7-month-old daughter, and it's very interesting to the comment about them calling everybody calling each other mother and mom and dad. I call my daughter mom sometimes, and I call my wife daddy sometimes. I mean, we really switch things around. It's very interesting how all the roles and barriers tend to break down when you have kids running around the house.
Well, it is sort of a closed society. As I say, you feel it's you and your wife and your child and Bert and Ernie and Grover. So,
I know. Yeah, they become everybody becomes one after a while, and there's we get back to our most basic kinds of ways of being, running around the house, all acting like children, and I'm surprised sometimes at how much a two-year-old can act like an adult, you know, and sort of debase my kind of behaviors, you know, making me seem a little more childish. So it's very interesting.
Well, thanks a lot for your call.
All right, thank you very much.
Okay, bye-bye. And my guest is Bob Green, syndicated columnist, who's just written a book about the first year of his daughter's life. Let me ask you a question that obviously a lot of other people asked you as soon as your baby was born, which was, do you plan to have another?
We've talked about it, and I mean, we're not sure yet, but we've talked about it. But I think people say, well, you think this is such a miracle, this first year of life. Do you think it'll be that way the second time? Will you be jaded to it? And I really think the miracle can't get any less miraculous. Again, the specifics will be different, but if it happens again, I'm sure it'll be just another miracle to kind of walk through wide-eyed and wondering as I have this time.
How has being a father affected your own ambition and your view of career? Because you have the chance now to have a balance in your life.
Well,
between home and work, that would be different than the balance you would have had before.
I think it's shown me things I never knew before. I mean, it's shown me that there are things that are so much more important than work. And yet, to try to avoid being hypocritical, I mean, I still am sort of addicted to my work, and I do it a lot. And often I resent it more than I ever did before because I'd rather be home. But I think for any man in this generation at this particular time, that's going to be a conflict. I happen to like the work I do a lot, but I also really like being a father.
Do you remember what kind of father your father was like? And have you?
Well, he was very much the stereotype of the father who came down to breakfast in the, I mean, there was a whole generation of fathers who came down to breakfast in the business suit and went off to work, et cetera. He was one of those. And I think, I know for a fact, though, that they felt the same emotions we did back then. It wasn't appropriate for a man to express them. A woman was allowed to express the feelings about being a parent. A man, a father, somehow wasn't. It was considered not manly. So he fit that generation's stereotype, but I know he cared about us very much.
Yeah, and in some ways you have what would be called, quote, a traditional setup now, because your wife is at home with the child and you're out working in a very high-pressure field. But what do you think separates you from the, quote, traditional pattern of the past?
Probably not as much as we would assume, but at least I'm free to express these emotions about being a father and about being a parent. And back then, I really think it was supposed to be the woman's job to have feelings about being a parent. And even though the father was feeling those things, he was supposed to sort of keep them to himself and be the stoic who went to work and, as we said, waited in the waiting room. And that's over now, and I think that's great.
How do you think if your wife wrote a book about the same period, it would compare to yours? I mean,
I think it would be very different. I mean, Good Morning, Mary Sunshine is definitely a book from a father's point of view. And if she was to write one, it would be different. But on the other hand, I think there's a great body of literature of women writing about the experience of motherhood. And I think the idea of fathers talking about these feelings is a little newer.
Are you continuing your journal?
What I've done is, I mean, the book, I actually kept it as, I mean, I went in every day and actually wrote the narrative. So what you see in the book is what I wrote that night. The second year, because I realized what a good thing it was that I'd been this close to my daughter, the second year I kept a little pocket diary, and I sort of like jot things down every day in notes form. I mean, not so much with the idea of publishing it, but just to, so I keep trying to notice. I mean, my advice to anybody who's a new parent is don't let any of this pass you by half noticed. Cherish it, and it's going to go by so quickly. So keep track of it. You don't have to write it down like I do, but I mean, keep track and notice, because it's a time you're never going to have again.
Well, I want to thank you very much for sharing some of that experience
with us. Well, thanks for having me back here again.
Thanks for being here.